Welcome to episode 368 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 5th of March 2016. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday at 12 p.m. Melbourne time. Please rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast and download the Tech Webcast iPhone app. Your hosts for today are Steve, Jacob, and myself, Daryl.
If you like new stuff before anybody else, if you like to keep your finger on the pulse, if you like the future and want to be in it, then keep on listening because we'll start in a minute. Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast. Cause technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast. Ha! Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast. Ha! Ha! Tech Webcast. Let's go!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 368 of the Tech Webcast podcast. And as you might know, when you heard the intro, your hosts today are myself, Daryl, Jacob, and Steve. Brad is away today. I don't know whether he's absent without leave. No, he did ask for holidays today, so he's off doing something today. So he's left the podcast in our hands today. So for better or for
sounds
worse.
Sounds dangerous.
So I've got two good co-hosts today to help me sort of get the podcast done and dusted. And so welcome firstly to Jacob. Hello, Jacob. How's your week been?
All right.
Cool. So you've had a good week down there in sunny Florida.
Well, it's not sunny here anymore.
Oh, it's not, well, I'll send you some of the sun down from hot burning Australia. It's baking hot here today, so I'll send you something down. And welcome back, Steve. Steve, you've been a bit unwell under the weather the last few weeks.
Yeah, very true. So it was really hard to, you know, with my voice all messed up pretty bad to really do any podcasts in for a while. But I'm back again.
Well, welcome back.
2 or 3 weeks later, so.
Oh, that's great. So, yes, now, having a bad voice is the worst thing for radio announcers and podcasters, and so it's not no point coming on if your voice sounds like Al Jolson or something like that. So I'm glad to have you back on board, Steve, because it was just going to be us happy few today.
Oh, yeah, checking out some of the tech articles right there. Some very interesting ones.
So we haven't got a guest today because, you know, Brad being slack didn't organise. No, I'm just joking, Brad. No, Brad being away, we decided not to have a guest on today. So we're going to do we've got some news stories to sort of chew the fat over. So without any further ado, we'll get into the news. Oh, I think I just cut that off a bit too short, but anyway, I was trying to minimise it so I could get back to the news articles and I went clunk. Yeah, so that's one black strike against me, so I'll never be hosting a tech webcast again. The first...
A few bloopers.
Yeah, a few on the blooper reel at the end. Christmas blooper reel of tech webcast. So our first story comes from... TechCrunch, and it's actually the Slack voice calling arrives on desktop. So this is something that I think of real interest. And Slack was being cheeky when yesterday it said voice chat would start testing very, very soon. Today, the new calls feature started rolling out on Slack for desktop and on the Chrome browser. It lets you start a private Slack call or launch a conference call in a channel that anyone can join with a click. And in keeping with Slack's light-hearted style, once you're chatting, you can send visual emoji reactions that appear overlaid on your profile picture to others on the call. Slack confirmed to me that the feature is currently rolled out in to less than 50% of users, but I think it's probably flowed on a bit since then. Team admins can check it if it's available to them. And there's a web link that you can click on the TechCrunch article here to check your own Slack team members to see if it's if you can now access voice. Slack already is offering integration with voice calling apps like Skype, Google Hangouts, Zoom, and BlueJeans, but these require a separate installation and were quite clunky by comparison. Slack's calls just need to be enabled by your team's admin, are super easy to use, and blend naturally into the Slack experience. So there we go, gentlemen. What do you think? What do we think about that, Jacob? About Slack voice calling?
I've used it.
And what can you tell us about it?
It's not ready for iOS yet.
Yeah, that's true. It's not on it's not mobile yet. But how did you try it as a through the website, like through the Chrome to another user? Were you able to actually connect with anyone?
Yesterday I tried it out with Brad.
And how did you find the audio quality and all that sort of stuff?
Better than Skype.
Better than Skype. Well, that's it. That's interesting. And that's really interesting. So you've actually had a test of it. So there you go. I mean, Jacob's had a test. So while that article was saying it's rolling out, you would probably find now that it's probably rolled out to everybody. And what about you, Steve? What's your thoughts on that particular?
If it's fairly new, like I said, I've probably been out for about 3 or 4 weeks. Yep. But of course, actually, from what Jacob said, it's kind of interesting. I know like Skype's based on more of a peer-to-peer connection where the host, whoever's calling, usually is going to be kind of like the server and provide the power to do the call. Where some other ones, I think like Google Hangouts and others, utilize more of a server type of connection where the power and the bandwidth is going to be on the server's end of the service provider. So I'm kind of wondering if it's more of a server-based or a peer-to-peer network type of connection.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's rumors already going around that it could really damage Skype, maybe in the enterprise market, because Skype's got, of course, its Skype for Business, which was sort of Link rebranded. Do you think that, if Slack can get this going and maybe, add video and that it may really, put a dent into Skype?
Well, yes. Go ahead, Jacob. I guess you were.
Yes, it would, because you don't have to pay a premium.
Yeah, although I think with the reading reading another article, the Slack audio calls, you can call individual people on your list in your team, but if you want to do a group call, then you've got to be in one of the paid for Slack accounts. So that would be the only difference. But it would be interesting to see what the price difference between having Skype for Business set up and the pro version, if you like, of Slack.
We actually talked to them on Twitter.
Oh, good. And what did they say on Twitter?
The paid version will get you group chat. You don't have to have the paid version.
Oh, that was interesting, because I was looking at their help section there yesterday, because I actually set it up for my work, and it was saying in the help section, oh yeah, conference call, you must have the above. So maybe they changed their mind on that. Well, that's good.
Well, one of the advantages that you have that Skype has over some of the other competitors, maybe even is that Slack?
Yep.
It has millions and millions of users, which I believe is one of the reasons why Microsoft kind of, purchased it, of course, maybe to integrate it into its services as well, as far as, for conferencing and business enterprise use. So, yeah, that's one of the advantages is it already has millions of users every day. A lot of times, I remember some old versions, you could actually make a call or it'd actually show you how many millions of users.
It did, yes, you're right.
Were using it. It could be millions of calls, simultaneously. So
that's certainly true, like the free version. Well, we're using Skype at the moment, the free version of Skype, it's got you know, my question would be, how will it go against, say, the enterprise version of Skype, which is, you know, Skype for Business, which you have to pay to use, and it's usually, you know, it's part of Office 360 or something like that. And so sort of Slack, I presume Slack would really be after getting into the enterprise market, you know, getting into the, you know, the businesses that pay for Slack, pay for the, you know, the pro version, if you like, or the enhanced version of Slack. And I wonder how that will go against, say, an organization that's got, say, Skype for Business set up on board.
Can I tack something in for you?
You can indeed, Jacob. Go for it.
Well, here's a cool trick. One person pays for the pro, everybody gets it.
That's right. You pay, I think you pay per seat. So in other words, you pay per user. So in other words, if you've got 20 users, you pay so much a month per user. So basically, yeah, you have to pay per user basis. And that's sort of similar to Skype for Business, that you're paying on a user basis. So if you've got a small organization with just, say, 5 users, well, you pay for 5 users. If you've got 150 users, well, you pay for 150 users. And so it's per seat. So yeah, it will certainly be interesting to see how these two go against each other and what Microsoft will do if it fears that it might lose some of its enterprise market. So any further comments on that, or shall we move along to the next one? Okay. Yep, the next one is from Gizmodo, and it says you can now tweet your tech problems directly to Apple. We're here to provide tips, tricks, and helpful information when you need it most. The Twitter bio reads, and if you have a question, well, we're here to help you with that too. And people are already taking Apple up on the offer in droves, in between the warm welcomes and suspicious lack of jerks. In other words, probably people have been blocked. Apple users are taking the opportunity to dump all tech questions and photos of and thousands of new followers by the hour they're getting. Apple's responding to the crazy crowds with hundreds of tweets. We offer support via Twitter in English is one of the common refrains so far, as is, please DM us. So I won't go on with that. But what do we think about now? Apple is offering some tech support via Twitter. Anyone like to jump in on that one?
Well, yeah, I'll take a bite.
Yep.
That's actually pretty good. I looked at their tweets. They're already over 2,000 tweets.
Wow. So they're obviously getting a bit of traction.
Yeah, they are, because I kept checking every few minutes. It's like, holy crap. They must have like a good couple hundred people.
Yeah, no, I guess it just shows that, you know, tech companies, you know, I mean, if there's already a platform out there, you know, Twitter's a big platform. It's got, you know, I don't know how many, you know, millions or billions of users out there. So why not tap into it to help with your customer service, I guess? What do you think, Steve?
Actually, companies have been doing this for many years. I remember myself twittering back and forth to some people or whatever, that some companies would actually jump in, so they monitor. I'm not sure how they do it, if they use hashtags or link to that. They'll pick up on it and they'll actually come on and like representative and, you know, give their thoughts or whatever. I'm kind of wondering why Apple didn't do it maybe a little bit sooner. Of course, maybe they would rather you go through more official channels, maybe, rather than perhaps Twitter. Of course, it looks like they changed their mind a little bit more on Twitter. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe yeah. They just don't want to do it directly, perhaps, because sometimes, often there's even user error. I've you know, experienced it myself, making simple mistakes, or yeah. I don't know.
It may be too that, you know, I mean, when I've ever had, not that I have a lot of Apple products, I have an iPhone and an iPad, but when I've had issues and I thought, well, where do I go? And I've gone to some of Apple forums, which have been, you know, very helpful. You know, other users said, oh, you try this. maybe where it would be very useful when there is a major issue or there's an issue that Apple's aware of, but they want to get the information out there so that not every user is calling Apple and saying, hey, man, I've got this problem. So maybe they can tweet out and say, yes, we know about X, Y, Z. This is how you fix it. Or we're in the process of, you know, investigating and repairing it. And they can get it out to a lot of people and actually save their own call centres or whatever the however Apple do it from people sort of bombarding them with the same question.
True.
But you're right. So there have been other organisations that have, you know, been using Twitter as a sort of a tech support platform for a number of years. But and Apple's been very private and secretive, and it still is, you know, particularly in the Steve Jobs era. You know, they were very loath at times to actually even admit that they had problems. So for them to even actually be using Twitter like that, maybe it's another sign again that the Steve Jobs era is well and truly over, and that that you know, maybe they're looking to open up a little bit more and you know engage with their customers a little bit more.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why Apple remains silent on many things. And I'm not necessarily talking about just tech support issues, like new products, because right now, just about nearly every tech company out there, you know, is always watching to see what Apple does, perhaps coming out with competing products. So obviously, if there's any hints of what may come out, then their competitors are going to jump on it, which they have before. Even with Steve Jobs' book, it was mentioned that supposedly he found the next new television, and of course we had a bevy of new smart TVs come out in response, for instance. So, but now on some of the issues of tech support issues, I think a lot of companies also don't want to admit that they do have some problems, I guess. And then again, sometimes it's just blown out of proportion as well. I've seen it where, because I do have a lot of Apple products, and but yet I see a lot of people make big things over these issues that I've never had ever had problems with, over the different iPhones, computers, laptops that I've owned. So I think they also don't want to think that things are, you know, a major problem it's actually a much smaller.
Exactly, and some of the tech blogs
really
you're
have
right.
problems. Yeah,
and some of the tech blogs, you know, if there's no information, they tend to, well, not say make it up, but they tend to sort of blow it up because they talk to two or three people and it makes it sound like there's 100,000 people with that particular issue. So, but yeah, maybe sort of Apple have looked at their communications and say, well, maybe too, we can use Twitter as a bit of a tool that if something like that happens, we can get the word out very quickly to say, hey, it's not as bad as what you're being told. This is what's happening and this is what we're going to do to fix it. And it might sort of, you know, sort of shut up some of the blogs and others that go screaming. Do you have any further to say on that, Jacob? You got another, you want to say something else?
All I have to say is it's just like a help desk, like Cox Help does for my ISP.
Yep.
They're on Twitter.
Yep. Yep. No, it's a big platform, and so I guess, you know, you could use it as a tech support tool for your company, and it doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to have your own, you know, tech support infrastructure set up. If you're a small company or something, you can say to people, "Well, look, jump on board to Twitter, and we'll." We can help you out through Twitter. So we'll move on if we've got nothing more to sort of say on that one. And this next story comes from Wired.co, but it's the UK version of Wired. And it's trolls using fake profiles to harass others will now face criminal charges, according to the Crown Prosecutor Service. That would be in Great Britain. The CPS will be updating its social media guidelines to ensure that people posting damaging or embarrassing material or using fake accounts to harass others can be investigated and potentially prosecuted. The CPS says the changes were being made to counter the growing amount of harassment occurring online. Online communication is developing into such a fast-paced new way of targeting and abusing individuals online are constantly emerging, said Alison Saunders, Director of Public Prosecutions at the CPS. We're seeing more and more cases where social media is being used as a method to facilitate both existing and new offences. It is vital that prosecutors consider the bigger picture when looking at evidence and examine both the online and offline behaviour patterns of the defendant. Accounts that spread fake information about victims could also face prosecution, the CPS said. If this fake information is believed, it could damage and humiliate the people it is targeted at, a form of offensive communication. So so that's an interesting one, and I'll be really interested to hear what both Jacob and Steve, both being based in the US, have to say about that. What would you like to say about that, Jacob?
Crazy.
Crazy? Why you think crazy?
Well, there's other things that's going on Facebook. Even with Steve, would Steve care to mention?
Well, that's up to Steve, I guess, but it depends on what he wants.
There was an issue. Somebody made a fake profile. Basically, it was just the same name, and then they were trying to friend my friends, you know, and obviously using the fake profile. And Facebook was very fast in shutting it down. I think 5 minutes.
Oh, that
once
was
I
good.
Reported it, but.
Yeah, I mean, for both you guys, like as we sort of chatted about before we started the podcast, you know, in the US you have very strong freedom of speech expression laws under your constitution and your Bill of Rights and everything like that. Whereas, of course, this is a British-based incident. So how do you feel perhaps as a US person about that type of law, and if something like that was to emerge in the United States, if someone, say, one of your politicians was starting to push that sort of stuff there, what would your feelings be on that?
Well, I think, in fact, the courts, there was something else that came up with this as well. There was this, it's called, we have a law here in America called, if you try to pretend, let's say you're a veteran, and you win the Medal of Honor, they get this law called honor law or something like that, which you could be prosecuted because you're using that to your advantage for jobs and, you know, along those lines. But then, of course, Congress came and said, well, that's considered a freedom of speech, even though they have not legitimately earned the Medal of Honor and so forth. So I have a feeling something like that, freedom of speech, may come up. And sometimes it does seem to get in the way of certain things. But I believe, as far as that goes, I hate to see the government get involved in some ways. I believe more companies should step up to help prevent this. In those occasions, with terms, and a lot of times they are covered under terms of service and things like that, but they may not enforce it. And even recently here in the U.S., we have something called... we had this woman called Anita Sarkeesian, which is a big feminist and a gamer and things like that. She brought up a lot of these gender issues, and this seems to be based a little bit more on gender, which I don't always like because it kind of gives a little bit peripheral treatment to women, and the reason why this is coming about in the UK. And sometimes it gets a little bit one-sided. It should be for, you know, both sexes. And well, anyway, Anita Sarkeesian also did a went to the United Nations, and she kind of was telling about online harassment towards women and things like that. Of course, nowadays many people encounter harassment. It's just not women. It's you know, of course, I've been harassed quite a few times. So I think that I see two problems right there. More companies should be involved to prevent this. Don't make it gender-based. Hopefully they're not going to do this. And, yeah, those are my thoughts on that.
It's interesting because looking back at the article, like the quote, the CPS will be updating its social media guidelines to ensure that people posting damaging or embarrassing. And I think, I mean, that can certainly be, you know, a grey area of what you consider damaging or embarrassing. I mean, see, in Britain in particular, and it flows on to Australia because we are very close with the British system, the Westminster system. Our laws for libel and defamation are much more severe than those in the United States. So, you know, if I got on Facebook and sort of said, you know, you were whatever and I told lies about you, then, you know, you could, you know, come at me through an Australian law firm and sue me for, you know, defamation or libel, and it would be very much the same in Great Britain. Whereas in the US, as far as I'm aware, because of your freedom of speech laws and that, it's much harder to sue someone, you know, if they've considered to have defamed you, than it is in those two countries, our two countries.
I think there have been some cases where technically you should be able to, we do have slander here, and it is enforceable through laws. I think there have been a few cases online, but then again, it's really hard to prove it. Yep. And you got to go to the IP service providers, and it's really hard to find out who it is, I think, in many cases. That's where things kind of get slowed down,
yeah,
unless they have proof of they know who it is that's doing it.
And the hard thing with, I mean, I understand what you're saying with, you know, the that the companies could. The hardest thing, and particularly for Facebook, because Facebook is so enormous and it spans basically the globe. Anyone that's got an internet connection can get Facebook. Is again, it's the sort of cultural and political differences. You know, for example, you know, Facebook might pull a page down because a woman had a picture of herself breastfeeding or something like that, and Facebook will whack the page down because it breaches their terms. Now, in some countries, would cheer that and say, well, that's fantastic. We don't want, you know, half naked or semi naked women breastfeeding on Facebook. Other nations would say, hold on, you know, it's not that bad. Come on, you know, get into the 21st century. And Facebook's got to try and sort of walk this tightrope between, and be some other nations, like, you know, some of our more authoritarian nations that want a lot of other political stuff pulled from Facebook because it's offensive, like the Chinese, for example. You know, the Chinese dissidents writing stuff, the Chinese government would say that is damaging and embarrassing and offensive to the people of China. We want Facebook to pull that down.
Well, a lot of those websites too, they from different countries are actually, they ban even, giving an example, China is one of them, ban certain websites you know, they have that sort of thing anyway. And a lot of companies, I think, sometimes go a little bit overboard with censoring simply because, you know, there could be lawsuits brought up and, you know, if they get, you know, consumers could go against them on this. So usually they're, you know, kind of go overboard just, you know, to protect themselves. And then again, I've seen the opposite as well. Some companies may not take down certain offensive things, even that some things I may question as well, that maybe it shouldn't be up there.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example sort of in Australia would be that we have strong laws now against sort of what we call race hate laws, you know, and things such as you can't, you know, demigrate minorities and races. So for example, for our Indigenous Australians, if a Facebook page went up, you know, sort of demigrating them and that, you know, and racist type terms, it could be asked, Facebook could be asked to pull it down. Now, some people might say, well, like, that's a breach of freedom of speech. A person should be able to, you know, demigrate another race or demigrate. But culturally and legally here in Australia, that's considered, you know, a bad move. And so Facebook's in this invidious position where it leaves it up, it gets into trouble with the government that wants it down, it pulls it down, and then other people, right, you know, rightly or wrongly, say, hold on, this was a freedom of speech issue. I should be able to say what I like, when I like. And it's hard when you've got someone like Facebook that's just, what, over a billion or more, billion plus users, and spanning so many countries that have different cultural, religious, ethnic, legal systems.
Well, when we think of freedom of speech, a lot of times it gets brought up. I mean, a lot of things is a freedom of speech, especially if you're out in public, depending on what country. But then again, I think people don't realize, like, if you put certain things on a website, a private organization, can be a company, you don't necessarily have freedom of speech within using their products or services, maybe. And that's not necessarily a freedom of speech issue. That is a company policy issue, which is perfectly, and in many cases, all right, because they don't want to get their products or services associated with you know, pornography or, you know, things like that. So
you're right.
It's kind of a fine line right there.
Jacob, you're quiet over there. Do you have anything? Because you were actually speaking before and you referred to Steve for his issue with Facebook. Do you have any other, your own issues or how do you feel about any sort of control over what's being posted on Facebook?
I could say a few things, but I don't want to name names.
No, don't name names, but just in general, because I don't want to have a lawsuit here in Australia, and in general, what's your view generally as a Facebook user and as an internet user about any sort of controls or restrictions on what you can say or what you can post?
Well, I would say I could post what I want, but I don't go overboard.
Yep. So you would sort of think it should be too up to a user to be responsible when they're posting stuff.
Yes.
Cool. Well, that probably puts it in a nutshell. So everyone out there, be responsible when you're posting. You know, think about it before you flame someone or do something. So unless anyone else has anything else to say on that particular one, it's a very meaty story, and I don't think it's going to go away in a hurry. I think it sort of goes back to the dawn of the internet, you know, that the internet is not controlled by one or two governments, and sometimes governments don't like the fact that the internet's out there and you and I and everyone else can sort of broadcast our views without them controlling it. So moving along to the next one, another TechCrunch one, and this one's a bit more, I suppose, a lighter story than the previous one. Facebook Messenger adds music starting with Spotify song sharing. First came the transportation hub with Uber, and now Facebook Messenger is launching its very first music integration with Spotify. Inside the Messenger More section in chat threads, all iOS and Android users will now find a Spotify option. Tap it, and they'll be shuttered into Spotify's app where they can search for something to share. Once they select a song, artist or playlist, they'll be popped back to Messenger with the option to share the photo of the cover artwork. Where a friend taps the photo, they'll be bounced over to Spotify to listen. So I won't go on with the rest of that. But what do we think about having music sharing via Spotify with Facebook Messenger? Jacob, you're a music lover. What do you think about
that? I've been using it with Brad.
And what's your views on that? How do you think it works so far?
It works pretty darn awesome.
Oh, cool. So you've been sharing a bit of music out from Spotify. I guess with Spotify, it's a big benefit to Spotify because those people who don't have Spotify and are seeing music shared, it might encourage them to actually go and join Spotify. So I'm sure that's the reason Spotify's, you know, got a potential billion people market by pumping it through Messenger. Steve, you're a music lover, I guess, too. I've never really asked you.
I don't listen too much online music as I used to, because a lot of times I'm watching videos or and so, you know, playing music in the background is a little bit harder. At first I thought it was like some kind of broadcasting music through these apps, but it looks like it's more like you're making recommendations or playlists or something, and then I guess that links to like the Spotify page or something.
What it does is you select a song, you go where into the menu it says share, then I sent Daryl an example.
A message.
Yes, with the I used the Spotify so you could take a look at.
And so if I tap that it would take me and it would open my Spotify app and I presume play the track if I've got it on iOS. If I've got the Spotify app, it would then. Now I don't know what happens if I've got Spotify but I don't have the premium service. Do you know, Jacob? Would I still, if I just had Spotify and I didn't have the premium service and you shared a track with me, would I still be able to play?
Yeah, like 30 seconds.
I get 30 seconds. So if you have got the free Spotify, you'd get a snippet of the track.
Oh, okay.
If you've got the full premium, of course, because you can search it, you would get to listen to the whole track, I guess.
Okay, I sent it to Steve so he can have.
Ah,
if you want to blow it up.
But so
blow it up.
sent it to your Facebook chat so you could take a look.
So everybody works
up as.
So I guess as, you know, for Spotify, it means they can tap into, you know, a billion plus Facebook users. And I mean, Facebook Messenger is growing very fast as a messaging platform. So they've now got access to, and perhaps millions of people who only may have the free Spotify service or don't have Spotify at all, and it may encourage a few more people to sign up for their premium service. So anyone else have anything interesting to say on that? But I suppose in general, it means, you know, it's just another example of companies sort of sharing, you know, Facebook's got this great monstrous platform and other companies doing deals with Facebook so that they can share their content with Facebook and hopefully encourage more people to sign up to their particular product or service. So we're moving along because we're almost through the stories. We're doing really well here. This one's from Engadget, and this one really I'll have to rely on my two fellow co-hosts because this is Amazon removes encryption support in latest Fire OS update. And I don't think Fire is available in Australia. Only the bushfire variety is available in Australia sometimes. As Apple continues to battle the FBI in favour of device encryption, it appears that Amazon has quietly gone the other way. According to several owners of Amazon tablets, the latest Fire OS 5 update actually removes encryption support from its devices. That means that if you previously had your Fire device encrypted, the latest OS update will essentially break that encryption. So you can either stick with the current OS to remain encrypted, but miss out on Android security updates, or you can update to OS 5 and risk your personal data being stolen, neither of which are great options. And you can see a slew of customer complaints about it. It's got a link here to Amazon support forums. It's worth noting here that Amazon did actually file an amicus brief supporting Apple in its fight against the FBI. The company has also been very bullish in saying that the Amazon Echo products, which are always listening for certain keywords, have strong encryption. So it's unusual to see the company essentially backtrack on its encryption efforts with the latest Fire OS update, especially as the rest of the tech industry rallies around Apple. We've reached out to Amazon, this is of course Engadget, for comment and we'll update the post if we hear more. And it's got an update. Amazon has responded with the following statement. In the fall, when we released Fire OS 5, we removed some enterprise features that we found customers weren't using. All Fire tablets' communication with Amazon Cloud meet our high standards for privacy and security, including appropriate use of encryption. So after me reading all that, it looks like maybe people got the bull by the horns here and thought that Amazon had taken all encryption away. What do you guys think about that? Maybe it's a bit of a storm in a teacup, Jacob?
Well, I could say on what you were saying about the bull, getting the bulls by the horn and getting gored.
And getting gored. What do you think, Steve? I think it's bull by the horns type issue.
It is kind of strange what Amazon is doing. I mean, on one front, they publicly said that they're supporting Apple with their problems with the FBI, and then yet they kind of take away the encryption in their Fire OS operating system. Now, keep in mind the Fire OS is more of a heavily modified Android operating system that's going to take out probably some features and or security issues. So, but yeah, it's kind of weird that they do that.
It's sort of interesting. It was interesting in that final where they had the update, and again, it's a little bit vague, but it says, you know, we cloud meets our high standards for privacy, including appropriate. Now that's the interesting term, appropriate use of encryption. Sounds like if you take Amazon at its word that there was some parts of their system that was based, you know, was around enterprise use, and enterprises weren't using the Fire tablet, so they decided to get rid of that part of it. But yeah, I guess the word appropriate use of encryption is the key phrase, and as I'm not an expert on encryption, yeah, I guess it's just a matter of it's hard to know whether they've actually gutted it completely or whether they've actually just downgraded it, if you like, from an enterprise level to a more consumer level, I guess. If you can have that in encryption, I don't know. Anyone know?
No, but I could say one thing.
Yes.
Like their Fire TV sticks and the player, those are susceptible to encryption unlocks too.
Yep. I'm totally at sea here because Fire is not sort of available in Australia, so I've never used it, and so I don't know. So that's why I'm not very au fait with. I know what the tablets are and everything, but we don't have sort of Amazon Prime, and we don't have the Amazon ecosystem over here that would take advantage of that. So that's why I'm sure the tablets have never been sold.
Well, it is surprising when they did they released the update. You know, their thoughts on encryption here. I think the key, some of the key elements here is they're saying the communication between the Fire OS 5 operating system, mostly I'm guessing for their tablets, maybe phone or whatever, and it is encrypted. But then again, you got to think, well, if some of the apps or the operating system is unencrypted, you know, it can still leak out details of user information or whatever before it even reaches the cloud. So I don't know. I don't know if that's, I mean, so, yeah, I'm sure their iCloud or their cloud is encrypted, but it may not matter. I mean, if their operating system on their device is not encrypted, it still may be susceptible anyway. Before they even go to the cloud, but.
It's one of those stories that it's very, I mean, when they say appropriate, I mean, appropriate can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And unless you're an expert in the encryption field and you can look at it and say, oh, no, that's quite safe, or no. But it does leave people in a bit of doubt, and I think that's the danger for Amazon, that, you know, maybe, I mean, Amazon may not be in the wrong at all, but the way it sort of sounds, it sort of leaves, if you've got a Fire tablet, you may suddenly go, you know, I may feel a little bit, you know, worried about what I share out now because I don't know what level of encryption is what anymore.
Hmm.
Any further comments on that one? Jacob, Steve?
Yeah, it's got the Amazon ecosystem's going to suck a little bit.
Yeah, I use Amazon, but here in Australia, and I'm not going to like it when I can actually get something from Amazon, but my frustration is that I'll look at a product 1 month and I'll say, yes, it ships to Australia. I'll go back the next month and look at the same product and they say, no, it doesn't ship to my place. And then I'll go back another month and it'll say again, yes, it does ship. So, but that's like an entirely different issue and I won't get bitter and twisted about it. I'll move on to our final story, which is from PC World, and it's another Amazon story. So maybe I can get bitter and twisted. And this is another one I'm going to have to throw to my co-host here because, again, these devices are not yet available in Australia. The Echo Dot and Amazon Tap bring Alexa voice smarts to cheaper hardware. Amazon's Alexa virtual assistant is turning up in more places with the Echo Dot and Amazon Tap. The Echo Dot is a $90 puck that connects with external speakers, either via Bluetooth or 3.5mm audio cable. Once connected, users can play music with voice commands, ask Alexa questions, control smart home devices, and order things from Amazon Prime. I'm sure that's the essential thing. Essentially, it's a way to bring the Amazon Echo's voice controls to existing speakers and sound systems. And I won't go on with the rest of that because I think that sort of sums up the device. Now, I'm going to have to throw it over to our panel over here of Jacob and Steve because I don't have never had any experience with Amazon's Echo. So Jacob, I'll throw it to you. You used Echo, and what do you think of it being in more devices?
Well, I haven't used Echo, but I've seen it in works.
Yep.
Well, they have a hidden feature that my buddy Brian Boer found. Well, hopefully he doesn't mind me playing that clip.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, no. The clip's...
It's not,
the clip.
It's not, It's okay.
Yeah, so it's not yes, I don't have to go and beep it out or edit it out, will I?
no cussing. It's just he found a skill. It's called Ask for Fart.
Yes, but so in other words, it's one of those command things that you can ask. Yeah, I don't think you need to play it. I think we understand what you're getting at.
That's why I didn't press play.
Yeah, no. So, but that's funny. But seriously, because as I say, I have no, other than on videos, I've never seen Electra in operation. What's, you know, comparing it, say, to a Siri or Microsoft's Cortana, Jacob, what have you used it and how do you find it? Is it comparing it to some of the other voice services out there?
No, I've actually used it through Brian when we're in a hangout. Brian usually puts a speaker up to the Alexa and I try it out.
Ah, okay. So you've found it's worked well.
Oh yeah, there's Easter eggs in there.
Yep, and also, what do you think of? I guess the idea in his article is that instead of it being just on the Echo device, it's now going to be on cheaper hardware devices. Do you think that's a good thing that Amazon's doing?
Yes, and so you don't have to pay the $120. But here's the caveat: to buy it, you have to have an Amazon Echo to order it through.
Oh.
Amazon, if you go to the website, it says limited. But if you use the Amazon Echo to order it, the order will go right through, and you'll have one.
Oh, okay. So yes, it still looks like you might need an Echo to get the full benefit of it. Steve, have you used the Amazon Echo, and what are your thoughts on that?
Not really, but it's kind of interesting what Jacob said, because I'm kind of wondering if it's more of a support for the Echo. I mean, as far as you're having Echo as the main device, and then you can hook up your various appliances, whether it be, you know, it sounds like stereos is going to be a big thing. That way you can get added functionality, maybe some home automation or something. Don't know much about the Echo. It does look kind of interesting. So maybe it's more of a support for the Echo, maybe.
Yeah, you could be right, because, you know, if Amazon just put out a range of much cheaper devices, they would really cannibalize their Echo market. If suddenly, as Jacob said, you know, you could buy a device at half or whatever the cost of the Echo, you'd go and buy that. So you might be right, Steve, that it's an add-on, that if you've got a big home and you've got your Echo in the kitchen, you can have all these smaller devices scattered around your house, instead of having separate Echoes everywhere at whatever the cost of the Echo is, and you can still access Echo in the living room and the bedroom and wherever.
Well, actually, I'm reading more into it, and it seems as well. I mean, because you think if you want to add more devices, I mean, if you had to buy separate Echo for each room, you know, the expense would be, you know, kind of a lot. Plus, you'd have so many different Echoes, you know. You want to have like one main Echo kind of controlling things.
Yes.
And then have these like slave units, you know, that's, you know, just tying it into your one central Echo device.
Yes, you wouldn't want to have to train six or seven Echoes as to what you like and dislike and all that. You're right. You want to have one Echo that rules, like one ring that rules them all. It's sort of one Echo that rules them all, I guess.
Yep, yep, yep.
So that's great. That's the Echo, and it's another one of those battles. You know, we've got Echo, we've got Siri, we've got Cortana, which are out there now. You know, battling for your
supremacy.
Your hearts and minds, and to rule the world. And maybe one day Australia might get the Echo. Although again, we don't have access to anywhere near the sort of Amazon's, you know, infrastructure or Amazon's services that they do in the US. So it might be a while before we see Echo out in Australia, unless Amazon start opening up big warehouses in Australia and start selling stuff directly from Australia.
Can you order from Amazon from Australia?
Yeah, I can order to the US Amazon, which is fine, but it's the matter of I have to look and it'll say whether they'll ship it to Australia. And,
yeah.
And some things will, like my the microphones I'm using at the moment here, I bought them through the AT, the Audio Technica. I ordered that through Amazon, and the stands and my Zune H2N, I ordered that through Amazon. Yep, that's fine. Just sometimes it's just really quirky. You know, you look at one thing and you'll say, yes, you can get that where I am, and then I'll go to get the cover for it, and the cover won't be, they won't sell me the cover in Australia. So I've got to go and look for somewhere else to get like the cover or, you know, those sorts of things. But yeah, you certainly can buy stuff. Although with our Australian dollar dropping, it's less and less attractive now to use Amazon. When the Australian dollar was very high to the US dollar, for us over here, it was very attractive to use Amazon because we could get stuff a lot cheaper, even shipping it into Australia, and what we could get at the Australian price. But now the dollar's dropped. It's not as attractive to sort of be buying stuff because when you pay the shipping charges and all that, it means we sort of, you know, yeah, the Australian product is more comparable now in price and that than the Amazon one. So any further comments on that one, guys? Anyone else want to?
Pretty good.
Well, that's it. I think we've run through the whole blinking lot of stories, and we haven't gone overboard on the time for the podcast. So I think that's fantastic. So I think that's about it. I think does anyone else have anything they want to say in general before we wind up podcast number 368?
Our Twitters.
That's it. So Jacob, where can people catch you on the Twitterverse on the intertubes?
JazzBot32669 1Z.
And me, they can catch me at Learnscape at Twitter or Daryl Hunt at Google Plus. And Steve, where can they find you and your live recordings?
Actually, if you get the Tech Webcast app, you can watch the live version as we're recording it live. And you can also get me on Twitter at Chatterbox_live.
That's a good segue. Yes, get the Tech Webcast app and then you'll never miss an episode, or you'll be able to watch us live, free to air, and even see the bloopers like me cutting off the earlier segment music too early. So if that's about all, thank you both Jacob and Steve for sort of holding my hand while Brad was away. And I think we did a good job. Hopefully Brad will be happy with, when he gets to have a listen to it later on, that'll be happy with the Tech Webcast. He'll be back next week. I'm unsure who he's got lined up next week, but I'm sure he'll have a good guest. He usually has some very good people. I don't know how he does it. What he does to get them on, what he bribes them with, or what he, you know, blackmails them with, but he gets them here. So don't miss out on watching or listening to next week. Episode will be episode 369. Thank you very much for listening today. And another Tech Webcast is in the can.
Tech Webcast. The hosts and guests are unsurpassed. Tech Webcast, 'cause technology, it moves so fast. Tech Webcast, ha! Stick around and you're gonna have a blast. Yeah! Tech Webcast, ha! Ha! Tech Webcast. Big ups to Andrew, to Brad, Jody, Steve, and Jennifer! Boom!